Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome to the Inside Lacrosse Division 3 Podcast. I'm Zach Babbo. Today will probably kind of be the last D3 podcast, if not for the season, then for quite some time, as the collegiate season is done and we are kind of wrapping up championship weekend here. We crowned a first-time national champion on Sunday as Stevenson Mustangs beat the RIT Tigers 16-14 at Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia in front of a pretty healthy, about 22,000-plus crowd. Anybody who's familiar with Championship Sunday knows that the D2 and D3 games sometimes produce some of the more memorable events of the weekend, and this game kind of continued that tradition. Stevenson went out to a 5-0 lead. It eventually extended to an 8-3 second quarter lead before RIT came roaring back and went on a 10-2 run to take the score to 13-10. In that third quarter in particular, the game just really descended into complete chaos. There are multiple penalties being called, particularly on Stevenson. It seemed the team kind of lacked control in the middle there. Coach Paul Cantabene got a couple of bench fouls. A couple of players got some inopportune, unsportsmanlike calls. But the Mustangs were able to kind of grind it out, and in the fourth quarter came out and scored 5 straight goals to take back control of the game. Another couple of bench penalties had them 2 men down in the waning minutes, but they were able to step up and kill off the penalties. And after a long pass downfield, the clock ran out with the ball in Pat Candon's stick, and Stevenson won their first ever Division III national championship in any sport. Today we're going to hear from Coach Paul Cantabene and most outstanding player Mark Pennington. I caught both those guys right down in the tunnel after the game and just got their thoughts on what was a great Sunday for Stevenson and a little bit of a reflection on the season as a whole. And after that, we'll hear from the Baltimore Sun's Ed Lee, who covers the Baltimore area pretty extensively in lacrosse. He followed along Stevenson pretty well this season. I ran into him at a couple of their final games. He was up in Philly. He reflects on what he also thought was a pretty wild finish to the season and kind of what this win means for this year's Stevenson team and for Stevenson as a program.
Well, we're here with a most valuable player, right? And Mark Big Shot Pennington, as Coach Kennedy joked about early in the year when you canned early in the year, you sunk the game winner against RIT, and you know, now you get the most valuable player award, and I think what is 5 or 6 goals today.
Yeah,
so,
five.
So I mean, just you know, you got a sense of just kind of how the season has been for you, or for the team?
I mean, today I had that one go where they shorted me, obviously, if you were at the game, but I had that one go and took my guy behind on the shorty and kind of came back to my right hand, and that was my only dodging goal today. But all of the 4 of them definitely go out to all my teammates and draw on the slide and just dumping it, and I was able to just catch and finish real quick. But it was a great feeling today and something we wanted to do all year, and I couldn't be more proud of my team and happy for Coach too.
Yeah, was that one goal, you know, that you got on the shorty there, is that almost kind of a point of pride thing? I mean, you're kind of, yeah, everybody tugs, you're a great shooter, but they don't seem to think much else. So then, you know, they put a shorty on you, you kind of go, all right, well, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to go on this kid here.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, definitely. It's happened all year, and, I mean, this is the biggest stage, and I was a little anxious once I saw that guy come out and play me. I kind of just went with it and took him behind and just rolled back quick to the right and lost him behind the cage, so... Yeah, it was worked out.
This is kind of an interesting journey for you. I mean, you were at Cortland, you know, mm-hmm. You transferred down to Stevenson. I mean, you know, in some ways, is this kind of an affirmation of all you were hoping for in getting here?
Yeah, definitely. Something I dreamed about since I ever started playing lacrosse and coming to these as a kid, and just to be here and actually get it done today was an unbelievable feeling, and hopefully we can do it 2 more times.
You know, what was kind of the key for you guys on offense this year in terms of success? I mean, I've heard Coach talk about how he lets you guys play a little bit more this year. You know, he kind of let you just make the plays you were going to make, and that seems to be a system all you guys really raised.
Well, today our game plan was definitely just to work the ball as fast and as quickly as we possibly could, just to get the best shot, not the first shot. And I think we did a great job of that today, especially in the fourth quarter. And Brent Heineken too on the faceoff X in the fourth quarter did an outstanding job for us. And just the way we came back from that 3-10 deficit going into the fourth was was really a great ending of this game.
Can you think of, like, the arc of the season at all? I mean, you guys, third game of the year, you score, you know, you have an OT win against RIT.
Right.
And now you end the year, you know, beating RIT in the national championship game. I mean,
we actually start out with them next year, the first game of the season, too. So. You know, I know. I mean, it's kind of crazy. They're a great team. I mean, you got to give credit to Coach Kuhn and all the RIT players. They played their butts off today, and they really are a great team. They work the ball extremely well on offense, too. So, I mean, it's not a team you want to see, but it is great to beat them for a national championship. But yeah, I mean, credit to them. They are a great team.
What was the arc of this kind of playoff run like for you guys? I mean, you know, you come through the MAC tournament, you win that, and then you kind of roll through the playoffs here. You know, a little trouble against WAC, you come back in that game, and then you get to beat Lynchburg, you get to beat Salisbury, you get to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think our playoff, the way it happened and who we had to play to get to where we are now was it actually helped us out a lot because we had to play such good teams from the second round. I mean, WAC is a second round game for us. That's a pretty hard second round game. And I think after we really gained the confidence after beating WAC, Lynchburg, and Salisbury the way we did and in the fashion that we did, I mean, we were really confident coming into here, into Lincoln Financial today. And I mean, it got a little scary there in the third quarter when they came back, but we played with a lot of heart today and got it done.
You know, was there somewhere going into the fourth quarter, did you guys all kind of take a deep breath, check emotions or anything? I mean, as you said, that third quarter was really one of the wildest quarters I've ever seen with flags and all
that kind of stuff.
And all of a sudden, a game that you guys had controlled largely, you were down by a couple going into
the fourth. What's scary about RIT, too, is they score so quick. But the way they move the ball on offense and their backdoor cuts. But, I mean, we knew that was going to happen. We knew they were going to make a run at some point just because they are such a great team. But the way we handled it, and when Coach brought us in before the fourth quarter, I mean, he kind of just told us we're here for a reason and reminded us of all the sacrifice that we did put in. We just had to play with a lot of heart, and that's what we did.
Was there some kind of extra confidence or anything you guys clicked into in that fourth quarter to go on, I think it was like a 5-1 run to get the lead back?
I think it was just the fact that we realized that this was the last 15 minutes we had together, and we wanted to sell out, and we wanted to be great, and unbelievable feeling today.
I mean, you know, you've had a little bit of time to digest it. Just what do you kind of think or feel? You know, getting you've come in here, you've always wanted to build this into a program, into a national champion. You're there now. You did it.
Well, I'm exhausted, first of all. But, you know, it's great what happened. You know, I think we've worked so hard and come over so many obstacles to do what we've done and to build up where we are, to be the program we are, especially nationally. It means a lot to win this game and to do that. And I'm happy for the players. I'm happy for our alumni that came before us who put in the hard work to get us here. That's really important to remember is that, you know, even though these guys won and did the job, all those other guys put in all the work to get us here. And, you know, the Richie Fords and the Steve Casimirs and the Jimmy Daly's, Evan Douglas's, and even the guys on my first team, Nate Montagna and the Dan Devers and all those guys, you know, they help us get here. And so it validates what we've done and how we've gone about everything. And, you know, I don't really know what it's going to do for our program, but I do know that I'm happy for our guys and our alumni and our school because I think it means a lot more to them. You know, it's just great.
You mentioned all those great alumni, you know, and that's kind of been the thing here where every year a class has kind of helped push the program a little bit further,
Exactly,
this senior class has now climbed the mountain. I mean, what does that kind of say maybe for the senior class?
And it says a lot for them because, we don't really play a lot of seniors, but the other seniors that play, I mean, they are unbelievable coming onto the field. They're the ones that help us in practice. They're the ones that keep the guys in line. They're the ones that really help instill our culture, like the John Camilleri's and the Sam Ramatowski's and all those guys doing the right thing day in, day out, helping the freshmen and the sophomores and the juniors do the right thing. So I think it validates what these senior class did. They created a culture at Stevenson that was the right culture, to being a good person, being a good student, doing things the right way. They created that culture and really kept these guys to that culture.
You know, every team is a little different year to year, every schedule and season's a little different, but I mean, was there just something about this year's team that they were able to kind of finish the job that's been building?
I think they bought into each other. You know, they wanted to practice. You know, and sometimes we practice for as long as the guys don't want to practice. They wanted to practice. We say the next day, you know, we win a game, you know, films at 2, practice at 3, they'd go nuts. You know, they wanted to practice. They wanted to be with each other, which I think is a little bit different than maybe some of the other teams were building that. And we weren't a team from top to bottom. This team, top to bottom. You know, everybody loved each other. Wasn't any cliques or anything like that. It was a team, you know, and a family right through.
Is there a sense of kind of what the arc of the season was for you guys here? I mean, 3 games in, you get an OT, you know, game winner against RIT, and now
you end the year beating RIT in the national championship game in another game that was really kind of wild and thrilling end to end.
Crazy game, wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. You know, we had a great year. We like playing that style. I think it helps us playing that crazy style. I don't think other teams can keep up with us at times with our athletes and how we play. And I think it's the right way to play lacrosse. You know, I think Coach Kuhn said the same thing. You love that style of play and what we want to do. But I think how the schedule we play, especially early on, all those great teams helps us for these games.
The playoff run in particular, I was just talking to Mark, he was talking about how he almost feels like the tough playoff run you guys had helped get you that much ready.
It did, yeah.
You know, I mean, in some ways, a murderous row of Southern opponents, you know, I mean, Wack and Lynchburg and Salisbury and, you know.
Yeah, and all those teams were great. I mean, I don't think everybody understands how good Washington College was. They were excellent, and I don't think anybody understands how really good Salisbury was. You know, Salisbury, you know, Dickinson was great. They were beating everybody by 5, 6, 7 goals, and they beat them by 6. You know, they crushed them and how good they were at the end of the year. And, you know, we were able to beat them, to get through that, and Lynchburg, another unbelievably good team and tough team, to get through those guys and the toughness. What's really tough about those three teams is how tough they are. They're just tough, tough teams, tough players, tough coaches. You know, they want to win. They don't concede anything. And to beat those guys really, I think, helped us for this game, especially that fourth quarter because, you know, we getting outscored 12-4 in the middle. You know, it was really bad. We weren't doing too well. But to come back and be great in the fourth quarter, and I think in all those games, we were the better team in the fourth quarter.
I was just saying, you know, what kind of toughness or what did they have to dip into for that fourth quarter? I mean, all of a sudden, you guys in a game that you came out and really great in the first quarter, the middle two quarters were really just melee, and now all of a sudden, heading into the fourth, you find yourself down. Yeah. You know, Mark was kind of talking about how you know some of the things that were shared in the huddle. I mean, what were you guys trying to focus on?
Just saying we're going to win this thing. You know, they had the confidence. They weren't down that we weren't going to win it. They weren't like, come on, we got to do this. Okay, coach, we're going to make the next play. Hey, fellas, we can do this. It was all positive. I thought that was the best part about the scene. There was no negativity at all in that huddle. It was all positive.
You know, you talked to me before about the 9 years ago, you know, slanted practice fields.
Yeah, the journey,
and the,
yeah.
And the, I mean, just a sense of that, a sense of too, the way the university has gotten more and more behind the school and now, you know, to get here.
Well, I think they see the school sees the value in athletics and how to build it and everything like that. I think we get better students because of that, more well-rounded students. And, you know, their help's been unbelievable. And it's not just for me, it's for all the teams. They just do such a great job from women's soccer to men's basketball to field hockey. They help everybody out. They really want them to be good. And when you have that kind of support and you know people care about you, especially at a school like Stevenson where it really is family, it's not a business, you know, you can't help but be a winner. You know, and we would have lost this game, I would have told you the same thing. You know, we're winners no matter what before this game even started.
What was kind of going through your head maybe the last 30 seconds or so from there to when the whistle blows the end of the game and you guys are leading, but all of a sudden you're two men down and, you know, not an ideal situation and just, you
know. I wish I could have kept my mouth shut. It would have just sucked it up and, you know, but I was trying to stick up for a kid and it didn't work. And I just said, hey, we need to make one play. You know, in the huddle, and I told the guys, hey, fellas, that's on me and the guys and Halachek and Dimitri, like, coach, you saved us all year. You know, you've done everything for us all year. We'll get you out of this one. And until the part, Halachek gets a piece of one and Dimitri makes a great save and an outside shot and we're out of it and we win the game. And you know, they live them up to their huddle and, you know, they wanted to win. I think they just wanted us a little bit more.
How big was the play, Dimitri, through this playoff stretch here?
Well, it's huge, you know, especially getting pulled in that first half against Washington College. It was huge because I think he just understood. I think he was a little overwhelmed in that first Washington College game about the style of play. But once he got his head together a little bit, it was huge. And to have 10 saves in the second half in a game like this in front of 22,000 people as a true freshman really says a lot about him.
And, you know, I mean, you this is about building a program. You want to do this not just once, but, you know, you say you want to be like the Salisburys and these teams
exactly.
That do this all
yeah.
the time. So, you know, what does this mean in terms of laying that down, that foundation, and going forward, especially when people always say the first one's hardest?
It is, and it's been a cruel road at times, but, you know, we're trying to build something here, you know, and we've really only had any good at lacrosse for 6 years, and so we're trying to build something, build a culture, how to get things done. Everybody else is at 50, 60, 70 years on us. You know, we got 17, you know, and we're trying to get better, and so this helps us and our program and our culture and what we want to do. I think it's going to help the other teams to get better. You know, anytime you get a national championship, help the other teams and go from that. So I think it really helps our culture. We'll see how it affects us next year. Hopefully, I think our guys are already talking about, coach, can we do this again next year? So they're kind of already focused. So once you get a little taste of that, you know, that little taste of walking onto that field and hearing that crowd go crazy and everything like that. So I was kind of kidding with Steve Gadelka before the game. It was like, you know, I was watching the Lemoyne Mercyhurst game. They made a big play and I go, God, I missed that. I haven't been there since in Maryland in the Final Four and I was at Maryland and, you know, at Towson. You miss those roars and those things. And so it was good to hear him again and to win the game, and hopefully the guys get a little bit of taste in that, you know what I mean? So So, which is great. And we kind of preached to them. And Kevin Myron, who's when I was at Towson, I told the guys when I was at Towson, when you get to the Final Four, when we got there, guys, play like you've never been here before. Play like you'll never get here again before. And he kind of reminded me of that to tell the guys that. And I think that's just the way they played in that fourth quarter.
Okay, the Inside Lacrosse D3 podcast welcomes back Ed Lee, the Baltimore Sun. Ed, you've been covering Stevenson for a while this year. You were up in Philly to cover the championship. I kind of want to just get into the championship game right now because it was a pretty wild game back and forth there. 16-14, Stevenson winds up walking away the winner. I mean, there was a stretch there where there was a lot of laundry flying around. There were a lot of bodies flying around. It was just one of the more hectic, chaotic games I've seen in a while. What were kind of taking through maybe some of your impressions from the game, from the early lead Stevenson jumped out to, you know, to as it, the game started to descend into chaos there in the middle periods?
Yeah, you know, I have to admit, I was surprised at how quickly they jumped out on RIT. My colleague and I, Mike Preston, we were watching the pregame warmups, and we were amazed at how crisp RIT seemed on the offensive end when they were doing their warmups. They were zipping passage to each other. It was almost as if they were taking shots at the goalie. They were going so fast. And they were still catching the ball and, you know, putting the ball in the right spot and in the net. So we were a little bit concerned that maybe RIT would be the one that jumped out to the early lead. But, you know, I think it was a case where, and I think the RIT coach sort of mentioned as well, that, you know, maybe they got a little bit nervous, you know, in the limelight of that stage. You know, and Stevenson used their pressure defense, their aggressive defense to get out on the ball and create some turnovers. And, you know, they got some goals in transition, which is always a forte for them. It's one of their strengths. So, you know, when they got out to that lead, I was surprised. Man, I thought that they were going to sort of cruise to the win. But then, you know, that third quarter was just unbelievable in terms of just what happened and how it happened and, you know, how penalties played a role in it, especially the penalties on Paul Akintobene, which is unusual for him. But, you know, they had the character to pull it out in the fourth quarter. I thought that when they went down in the third quarter that they would not be able to come back. I thought, well, this is RIT's championship now, and, you know, it's been a nice run for Stevenson, but, you know, they'll sort of just go back and say, you know, it was just it was an honor to be there. But, you know, and I talked with this with Paul afterwards, that this year, this group is much different than his previous teams. That his previous teams may have had more talent, but this group is immensely tougher. He said that they just have been through so much. They've sort of seen adversity. They've dealt with adversity. That you know, they know that certain points in games that they can rise to the occasion and overcome tremendous hurdles. So, you know, this team may not have been as talented or as skillful as previous ones that he's had, but they certainly have had more character.
I was going to say, you know, I mean, that's kind of an interesting way that RIT almost maybe, yeah, was a little caught in the moment as opposed to Stevenson being able to jump out at them. But I guess that's kind of an odd, you know, thing to happen, because it's not like either team had experience being on that stage. I mean, was there maybe something about the Stevenson team that just, you know, they got there and they weren't caught up with being international championship right off the bat? They were there to really seize the moment in a way that RIT maybe wasn't, because I mean, that's one of those phenomenons you hear about a lot when, you know, a team that's maybe been in a lot of championships plays a team that hasn't. But we had two first-time champions going at it on Sunday.
Right. You know, I think there's something to be said that Stevenson, I mean, like you said, they were both first-time participants, but Stevenson's roster, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I get the sense that it's a little bit more experienced because some of the guys are older, particularly the starters. I mean, I look at Parker Bratton, Tyler Reed, Chris DeShield, been there 3 years, Peter Green, you know, those guys, Nick Rossi, those guys have been there for a while. And I'm trying to recall RIT's roster. You know, I believe they started a freshman on attack, a sophomore on attack. You know,
yeah, RIT's roster is definitely younger, yeah. Beyond that, I mean, you had the Stevenson team has been to 5 straight NCAA tournaments, I believe. They've been to 4 semifinals in that mix.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
mm-hmm.
So there's definitely more playoff experience there. So that obviously, I guess that definitely factors in a lot. I mean, I got that sense too. This was a team that just had been down this road a lot before, and there was just something about this year's group that, you know, that they were just not going to be denied kind of, you know, advancing and then kind of getting to where they wanted to be.
Right, right. I agree with you. I just think that Stevenson just had a little bit more experience. The players were, you know, a year older, a year wiser. So, yeah, maybe that had something to do with them sort of being able to withstand the scrutiny that comes with playing at that stage, you know, with those kind of stakes on the line.
And I guess, you know, along those lines, I mean, maybe is that, do you think that's what clicked in? I mean, Stevenson had an 8-3 lead in the middle of the second quarter there, and then I believe RIT went on about a 10-2 run or something a 10-2 run to get the score to 13-10 going into the fourth quarter. And then all of a sudden Stevenson comes out of the gate in the fourth quarter and just unloads five goals, you know, at a stretch. It almost looked like where almost any guy who wanted to suddenly step up and go at his man was going to, you know, can one. What did that kind of, you know, what were you thinking when you saw that play out in the press box of all of a sudden, you know, this Stevenson team that looked like they were on the ropes or almost kind of shot themselves in the foot a lot in that third quarter stretch, you know, then just comes out and just starts to dominate for about 5 minutes there to get the game back in their hand?
Yeah, you know, I thought the third quarter was disastrous for them, and I thought that not just in terms of the score itself, I thought mentally, you know, they were sort of committing the things that they had done in the past with previous teams, particularly in sort of high-energy affairs against Salisbury. You know, they were getting caught up in, you know, swinging their sticks and getting frustrated and, you know, mouthing off to opponents and the referees, and they were getting flagged for those violations, which they should have been. So, you know, I thought, man, this looks a lot like, you know, games that they've had against Salisbury where they lost their cool and eventually Salisbury would come out in the end and walk away with a win. But, you know, what they showed me in that fourth quarter was that this was a team that, yes, it was talented, yes, it had skills, and yes, it had done so much to get to this stage, but it was sort of a team that relied on emotion, and they were able to bottle that emotion, to bottle the frustration and try to keep it down as much as they could and try to focus on the present and say, hey, look, you know, we just need to get one play at a time. And I think, you know, when they scored so quickly, I believe that the first goal came in maybe the first minute of the fourth quarter. I think about getting that first goal so quickly, that may have sort of refocused their sights and got them energized. You know, I think that really helped them in terms of settling them down, calming them down, and getting them ready for the rest of the game.
You know, were there any players that kind of really impressed you out of this playoff run? I mean, I think a lot of people were surprised by, particularly after he struggled in the WAC game, Dimitri Pekunis kind of playing as big and as strong as he did down the stretch, particularly, you know, the second half against Salisbury. He had a lot of big saves to really keep the door firmly shut on Salisbury. And then in this game, I mean, we talk about those stretches of penalties, you know, RIT was only able to score 4 of 10 on man up for the day, and that was really big in the fourth quarter when all of a sudden, you know, Stevenson gets a couple more kind of foolish penalties there that, you know, that land him in the box. They're down two men with 1 minute to go about, and down, you know, only up two goals. I mean, it did not look like a great spot, especially since one of those penalties was a non-releasable, I believe. You know, and Pekunis was able to kind of shut the door there and get the extra save or two. You know, I mean, he jumped out to me. I don't know if you have thoughts on him or other players that maybe kind of impressed you through this playoff run.
No, I agree with you. Dimitri was clearly the standout for me on the defensive end because, as you mentioned before, you know, the way he struggled that first quarter against Washington College, I thought, man, they're going to have to go to Kevin Kane. And you know, he's a talented kid, but he's sort of an untested kid. And, you know, what does that mean for this program? Because I just didn't foresee Kevin Kane being able to beat a team like Lynchburg or even get past a team like Salisbury. But, I mean, Dimitri, I mean, it's one of those situations where perhaps the benching was good for him because I think it helped him recollect his thoughts, helped him to focus. And, you know, he's really good about sort of stepping up to the forefront and saying, yeah, it was his fault for allowing those goals and that, you know, every goalie goes through this, so that he never really gave himself an opportunity to get down on himself, to get frustrated and disappointed. Just chalk it up to saying this is part of the learning process that every goalie goes through, and, you know, he's going to become a better player for it. One of the other guys that impressed me was Mark Pennington, and not just because of the fact that he scored five goals and he's such a sharpshooter, but I think he showed that in a couple of those goals that he can dodge, you know, he can move around. He's not just a guy who, you know, you have to give him the ball and he has to stand there and set his feet and then take a shot at the net. He's a guy who can dodge and initiate and, And he did that a couple times against RIT. So I think he may have sort of dispelled that stereotype about himself. And then Peter Green, just the way he played all season, I thought, both offensively and defensively, he was so good at scoring goals for the team and gaining and jump-start offense, but he was equally as adept running back on defense and playing short stick committee and when he had the chance, sparking transition. So those three guys really impressed me.
Yeah, actually, I couldn't agree. Those three guys really jump out to me more. Kind of a little tidbit on all of them is that one of the interesting things when I talked to Dimitri after the game, he raised a good point that, you know, he went to Calvert Hall. He had guys who went to, you know, UNC and Hopkins, mm-hmm. and Ohio State on his team that he was playing goalie against all year. So he figured, you know, if I'm playing goalie with these kids who are big-time D1 prospects, you know, I feel like I got the stuff to, you know, to be able to play at any level of collegiate ball. And I thought that, you know, it's a pretty confident, interesting perspective on it. And Panatin was kind of funny after the game that he realized he was getting shortied. And you know, he kind of sounded like he wanted to dodge a little bit as a point of pride to be like, you know, hey, you shouldn't just short stick me. But he was kind of joking with me that as he started getting some of those dodges, he was getting a little nervous himself. Like, you know, I can, you know, like make this move, right? Like I'm not going to suddenly come out here. So that was kind of funny. And yeah, Peter Green just played like a force all postseason. I mean, he just was everywhere he needed to be, flying up and down the field. He was, you know, laying some big hits, getting some big ground balls, and the one thing that surprised me was how quick his release was in these games. I mean, he had a couple of goals where all of a sudden he's dodging, and almost before you even notice it, he just cocked back and fires, and I did mm-hmm. not expect him to kind of be able to just kind of unload. I mean, so many of these Stevenson shooters are used to seeing kind of take a big wind up, a crow hop, and, you know, and then unload something. And Green just kind of all of a sudden real quick fires it out of his stick. And then, I mean, he had to score in, you know, he had two goals in the first quarter yesterday to get the ball rolling for Stevenson. He definitely was kind of one of those senior class guys that sensed the moment. I guess in some ways that, you know, was there something like that about this Stevenson team this year that maybe let them get over the hump? Just something about the determination of a senior class? I mean, you mentioned kind of the way this team had a little bit more grit to them, maybe. A couple of the guys talked about, and Paul talked about with me after the game, how this team kind of, they were more cohesive, they kind of played for each other more, they had a little bit more of that almost, you know, end-to-end buying in kind of thing than maybe a couple of the other teams that were more talented, but maybe just didn't have that kind of, you know, cohesive sense to themselves, you know, had.
I think there were a number of factors that played into their campaign. I mean, I think there was a lot of confidence based on what they did last year, getting to the national semifinals against Salisbury when, you know, that was a team that wasn't expected to get there. I think they may have surprised themselves a little bit, and by doing so, they sort of have built a foundation. Okay, you know we can reach this level, and now we've reloaded. We got, you know, some transfers. We got some new guys coming in. Yeah, there's a sort of an expectation that they could go further. And as much as you hate to say that any injury would impact the team, I think the loss of Steven Bannick really sort of brought the guy together. I mean, he was a guy who arguably was their best attackman last year. He was a dodging force who created opportunities for his teammates. And, you know, when he got injured in the game last year against Salisbury and then re-injured his back, I think he re-injured his hand, I believe, and then was lost for the rest of the season this year. I think that sort of brought the guys together again to say, look, you know, we're not going to have perhaps our best player on the field, but that doesn't mean that this is an opportunity to get down on ourselves and think that we're out of it. You know, this is still the same team. Yes, we lose an important piece of the puzzle, but, you know, we have other guys that can fill that role. And you saw, you know, Chris DeShield moving from midfield to attack is just sort of, he's sort of like that everyman, you know, kind of mentality where he can fill any role and he can do anything that you ask of him. And I think they sort of unearthed a gem in having Mark Pennington transfer, but you know that's something that, you know, they took advantage of. They found a guy on their roster that could help them, and then they went with it. So, and I think, you know, the general confidence that they got, you know, as they rolled through the season. Yes, they did have a loss to Tufts, which was very surprising because that was one of those games where they had the lead and they coughed it up. And then, you know, they had that loss at Roanoke, which was kind of another stunner because, again, it was a game where they had given up a fourth quarter lead. But I dare say that those losses maybe made them tougher and helped them to learn that, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, how many minutes you play. You can play a 56-minute game, but if you don't play well in those last 4 minutes, is going to catch up to you. So I think all of those experiences helped them become the team that they were this year.
And, you know, now, I guess, as a guy who kind of covers the greater Baltimore area, I mean, what does the championship kind of mean for Stevenson in terms of going forward and everything, in terms of, you know, a university that wants to become bigger in Division III athletics and a lacrosse program that, you know, Paul's been talking about this for years about wanting to be like a Salisbury or like a Cortland, those teams that get there all the time. And, you know, he's starting to build up that resume of a lot of deep playoff runs. He finally got, you know, into a championship game. He won the first championship. A lot of people kind of, you know, I guess maybe almost half tongue in cheek kind of say how the first one's the hardest. I mean, they're all pretty hard to get, but, you know, what kind of a sense do you get for in terms of the building of a lacrosse program and in some sense the raising of the university's athletic profile now?
Well, you know, I think it'd be fair to say that Stevenson has sort of been on the recruiting map nationally among D3 schools just because of the success they've had over the past 4 or 5 years. I mean, it's hard not to notice what Paul Kinda-Bennett has done with this program. But I will say that the national championship certainly gives them a luster that they did not have in the beginning. And I think you know, no one's going to say that they're like Salisbury, they're like Cortland, and like Hobart, you know, that those sort of programs that have dominated the D3 landscape. But I think this sort of enhances their profile. And I know that I've talked to you know, some people in the know about Stevenson, and that they're now generating interest from recruits, not just sort of in the Maryland area who know them, but even outside of Maryland. And so there's a general new interest in Stevenson as a program, as a place to play lacrosse. Especially if you're an offensive player, you know that, you know, Paul Kinda-Bennett, they might run a couple sets, but, you know, when worst comes to worst, they usually just throw the ball out there and say, okay, guys, just play offense and see what can show us. And for an offensive player, when a coach takes the reins off and says, you guys just handle it the way you can handle it, I mean, that's like mana from heaven, you know, that they can take advantage of that. So I think that they're going to be a program that's going to get better. They're going to get stronger. They're going to get better recruits. They're going to get guys, perhaps even guys from sort of D1 schools who are, you know, maybe disinterested in playing Division I lacrosse or looking to get more playing time. We're going to start viewing Stevenson as a viable place to go to.
All right, yeah, well, I mean, I think this is definitely, obviously, the first step in what Paul Kinda-Bennett is going to hope is a long process of building himself, you know, a national power here, a multi-national championship thing. But there's just something about you, and the joy and the relief you could kind of see on everybody's face to finally get here and to win this thing. They've been building to it for a while, and it seemed like, you know, what a relief almost maybe for Paul, and what a joy for their players to kind of get to that stage and be able to finally hold that trophy, you know, come Sunday afternoon. So I was definitely kind of caught up in that, running around with all the guys downstairs trying to catch a couple interviews right afterwards. So
yeah, I agree. I mean, this is a significant achievement for them, and, you know, congratulations to them. And I think it's one that they'll be able to use for years and years to come.
All right, well, Ed, thanks a lot for coming on and talking to me and, you know, kind of following along with Stevenson all year here. And I guess now that the lacrosse season's over, I won't be running into you in many press boxes anymore now. So enjoy your summer.
Thanks, Zach. Thanks for having me on.
Take care. Stevenson's title wasn't the only Division III accolade handed out at the end of the year. The USILA also doled out their individual awards for the season. Sam Ozix of Endicott College was awarded the Faceoff Specialist of the Year honor, as he won 354 of 465 draws, good for 76.1%, while scooping up 263 ground balls. Sam Stanton of Wesleyan won Short Stick Specialist, scoring 2 goals and 10 assists, while scooping up 67 ground balls and causing 14 turnovers. The more named awards, Mike Kameski won the Outstanding Goalie, the Ensign C. Marklin Kelly Jr. Award. Kameski won 18 games for the Dragons this year. He played 1,034 minutes and 10 seconds in cage, gave up an average of 5.98 goals a game while making 178 saves in the season, saving 63.3% of what he saw. Tufts defender Matt Callahan won the Outstanding Defensive Player, the William C. Stiles Memorial Award.
Callahan gave Tufts another season of sound cerebral defense, scooping up 46 ground balls and causing 24 turnovers, while also helping a little on the offensive end, scoring 3 goals and 3 assists. The midfielder of the year won the Fran McCall Award. That was Joe Slavik, also of Cortland. Slavik scored 33 goals and 26 assists, while scooping up 28 ground balls. And the outstanding attackman, the Lieutenant Colonel Jack Turnbull Award, was awarded to Brian Cannon of Dickinson. Cannon scored 48 goals and 20 assists and scooped up 51 ground balls for a record-setting year for Dickinson as they went 18-1 on the season, eventually falling to Salisbury in the playoffs. Cannon's teammate, Brandon Palladino, really took home the top honors, though. He won Long Pole Midfielder of the Year Award and also the Outstanding Player of the Year Award, the Iroquois Nationals Award. Palladino came on the podcast to talk about the end of his fantastic collegiate career, as well as what was a pretty remarkable season for Dickinson on the whole. All right, the Inside Lacrosse Podcast welcomes Dickinson long stick Brandon Palladino, who just recently won the USILA Iroquois National Player of the Year Award. Brandon, thanks for joining us today. I mean, this is a pretty impressive season for Dickinson overall. You know, obviously you guys, you fall in the playoffs, which has got to be disappointing, but you made an undefeated run before that through the regular season. You won the Centennial, which, you know, arguably could have been the most difficult conference in the country this year. And I mean, generally you guys were playing great ball all year. I mean, can you tell me a little bit how this season played out for you?
I mean, yeah, it was just from the start. I mean, we just kind of, our senior class wanted to make a lasting impression on Dickinson lacrosse, and we wanted to do this by, you know, trying to win a national championship. That was our goal that we set at the start of the season. We came up a little short, but I mean, our senior class really has brought this program to new heights, along with the coaching staff and everybody else. But I mean, when we walked on campus the year before, the team was 6-9, and every year since we had been there, we'd won at least 15 games. So we knew we had to work hard, and we knew the type of effort it would take, but we wanted to, you know, take Dickinson to the next level and do what we can to, you know, improve the program and the reputation of the school.
Are there certain highlights that kind of stick out from this past year for you? I mean, I would think probably, you know, somewhere up there on the list has got to be in the same weekend, winning the Centennial Championship and then, you know, getting the number one seed in the South, which is, you know, since that spot has almost been Salisbury's by default in the past, it must feel kind of, you know, cool to be the new blood who got to, you know, go into the playoffs highly touted.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. I mean, we worked the entire year to try to, you know, cement the best position we could in the NCAA tournament, which would be meaning getting home field advantage and having to play at Middlefield for the whole NCAA tournament. So we worked hard to do that. But, I mean, with the Centennial Conference Championship, we had played F&M a week earlier, and we knew we didn't play our best game. We only beat them by 2 goals. And, you know, so we knew that they were going to come in with a lot of confidence. But we knew we were the better team, so we kind of wanted to show the country and the conference that we were the top team. And, you know, beating them 16-2 on our home turf was pretty amazing because they're one of our biggest rivalries in conference. We just came out early and just kind of stepped on them and didn't really let them get anything offensive or defensively. It was a great win, and it was really exciting. And then, obviously, Sunday night, we were all watching the Division III announcement show, and we saw that we were the one seed, which was great. We were really excited about it. We know we put all the effort in on the off season to get this award, and it was cool to be able to, you know, receive this number one seed.
You know, you got, like you mentioned, the program solely got better, you know, over the course of your career there. Was there something about this year kind of going in where you guys maybe had a sense of how good the team was?
I mean, it was almost like it felt like it was 4 years in the making for us, you know, because when we came in, the seniors that when we were freshmen, they were the ones who, you know, instilled on us the type of work ethic and the type of standard that Dickinson lacrosse was going to help hold from that going on forward. So we knew what we had to do is we had to work hard and kind of, you know, do what we could to make this program what it can be. And basically everybody bought in. Like, I know that I can't really speak for before, but we put in a lot of time in the off season, thick work, shooting, running, lifting, and we wanted to make sure that we were primed and ready when we got on the field to be a top performer and, you know, just kind of show the world that Dickinson lacrosse is a team that's not going to, you know, it wasn't a one-year thing. We wanted to make sure that it was a legacy that we cemented throughout the 4 years and that it would just continue to grow moving in the future.
I guess, you know, speaking along the lines of legacy, you, the accolades you racked up in your 4 years at Dickinson are pretty impressive. You're, you know, four-time first-team All-Centennial. You are a two-time first-team All-American, one-time third-team All-American. You won Centennial Conference Player of the Year this year. You won USILA D3 Player of the Year this year. You've scooped up 275 career ground balls, 144 career turnovers. And, you know, this year, in years past, I know you've had an offensive touch, and this year you did as well. You get 5 goals, 11 assists along the way. I mean, do you have kind of a sense of almost, you know, what you were able to accomplish in college, or kind of, you know, what you're leaving behind from a career like that?
I mean, yeah, it's pretty crazy to think about it when you talk about all those awards. But in my opinion, I mean, they're team awards because there's plenty of great players in Division III, and a lot of them don't get recognized based on just because they're not on this top team or that. But, you know, my teammates and my coaches are the ones who put me in position to get these awards and to get these receive these accolades. Because, I mean, you know, you're not winning the D3 Player of the Year, Conference Player of the Year, if your team's not one of the top teams in the country. And our, you know, our work ethic and our efforts throughout the entire season let me be able to, you know, perform my best and be able to receive these awards. But it's really a team award more than anything else. And it just shows how hard the coaches and our team had worked to put me and everybody else in position to win and to be the national contender throughout the entire year.
Can you take me a little bit through your personal growth or evolution through Dickinson? I mean, obviously you weren't really a kid that took that long to get going. If you know, your first season, you're already first team All Centennial, and you know, you'd kind of been generating buzz as being one of the better long six in the country from the time you landed at Dickinson. You know, how have you kind of see your own growth through the program?
I mean, you know, coming in, I wasn't really highly recruited. I came from, you know, a pretty average high school program in New Jersey. And I wasn't really that big, wasn't that strong. So, you know, I came in with kind of a chip on my shoulder, wanted to prove all the people that kind of, you know, looked me over and didn't really think that they saw much. I wanted to kind of show them that they were wrong and that I could, you know, play with the best of them. So I could kind of just every time I went out there, I wanted to show the world and the country that I can play and just be a great player. So I just wanted to, you know, go out there, work hard, and do what I can for my team to, you know, win. I just want to, you know, that's all I really care about. I'm a team player. I love winning more than anything, hate losing, you know, but it was just great to be able to go out there with my teammates from the beginning. You know, freshman year, it was great to be able to get an opportunity to start right from the beginning. And then I was able to show the coaches that I could do it. And, you know, my role improved from there and just kind of kept on working hard. You know, when I came in, I was more of just strictly kind of on ball, just one-on-one player. Throughout my years, I kind of developed my off-ball game a little more and my offensive work, which, you know, you got to contribute to the coaches. They were just great for me and able to, you know, make me the player that I am today.
So, you know, long stick mini is obviously a kind of a specialty position. I mean, in years past, it, you know, was kind of your fourth defenseman or so, and it's kind of evolved into its own kind of more specific, you know, style of play now. I mean, how did your career in that position go? I mean, did you come out of high school as an LSM? Were you kind of thinking of maybe trying to play close, and then LSM is where you figured out? And even over your 4 years at Dickinson, was there ever a temptation to, you know, want to move to the close unit or something like that, or did you really kind of realize that there was something about that position of long stick midi that really just suited how you played?
Yeah, I mean, in high school throughout, I pretty much played long stick midi the whole time. I kind of like the way that you can kind of have an advantage in the middle of the field. You get to play offense and defense, and at the same time, you know, you get to just cause havoc in the middle of the field, create turnovers, and, you know, kind of decide the game, in my opinion. I mean, I think the long stick midfielder has done a lot and changed the game the way it's played. And I just feel like, you know, maybe you're not on the field the entire game like a long ball defenseman, but, you know, you can really create a lot of problems with game planning, other things like that. And you're able to, you know, you can score, move the ball. Also, at the same time, you can take the ball away and create transition, which is really key for our team this year. We just love the transition game. And I think that's what made us so successful, you know, being able to put the ball on the ground, whether it be me, Peter Zouk, a lot of other great players that we had, and kind of go out there and do what we can to help the team. And that's why I like the long stick midfield position as opposed to down low. You know, you're kind of standing around a little more. I like to be active, aggressive, and, you know, just kind of make things happen out there.
You know, along those lines, I guess, are there particular skills you think that you really kind of developed or got sharper through your careers? certain things maybe that you wanted to work on that you've really kind of, you know, felt were really well, really well done by you maybe by the time you hit your senior year?
Well, I had a ice hockey background. I played hockey my entire life, so I think that really helped me with ground balls, you know, just always having to stick on the ice, the ground balls. I was able to scoop them up, and I think that was a big thing for me. So I think that was a strength that I had when I was coming in, just ground ball play, being able to pick it up and move it. I feel like I have pretty good speed, too, which helps, obviously. But the things I think I felt like I needed to work on was definitely off-ball play. Like in high school, I really almost never played off-ball. I kind of would always just have guys switching and, you know, getting on the ball whenever I could so I could play one-on-one, cause turnovers. And, you know, coming in, I didn't really lift that much in high school. I definitely needed to work on my strength and my agility, so I wanted to do that and make sure I was lifting a lot more. We had a great, you know, strength and conditioning program at Dickinson, so we were able to, you know, help that. And I got a lot stronger, so that's if guys got in on my body, I was able to, you know, push them off. And also, you know, the off-ball play, just the coaches were able to help me with that since I was pretty new to that. And that I really, you know, never played the crease, never knew about the whole, like, team defense type thing, which I thought I became a lot better at by the end of my career at Dickinson.
You know, along those lines, I mean, being that you're so good at the long stick midi position, are there certain things maybe that you would think, you know, people trying to aspire, kids trying to aspire to that kind of career, you know, would really harp on working on maybe that especially maybe skill sets that are kind of unique to that long stick midi spot that, you know, maybe would be more useful to a LSM as opposed to a close guy or something like that?
I think definitely the ground ball play is key because, you know, you're on the wings, which is very important, and then just picking the ball up and getting it up in transition. You know, I coach in the summer sometimes, and the ball is always on the ground, and you want somebody who can go in there, pick up the ball and move it, and, you know, at the same time, be able to play offense. Some guys, you know, they're not as confident with their stick, but you want to make sure you have a good stick, be able to, you know, use both hands and be able to, you know, be dominant, be forceful, you know. That's how you get, you know, that's how you draw the defensemen, and that's how you get those assists, because, you know, you're going downfield and you're making them make a decision. You're either going to shoot the ball or you're going to make them draw the slide and then pass it. So it's just basically, you know, you want to be aggressive and you want to be, you know, passionate. You want to have passion for the game. You want to love it, and you want to make sure that your teammates, you know, you're kind of the catalyst out there, I feel like, and you want to make sure that the energy of the team and the energy of the entire, you know, squad is really up, and you can help them in any way you can, really.
And, you know, you mentioned before that you weren't that highly recruited coming out of high school. I mean, so how did you kind of end up at Dickinson?
I mean, in all honesty, I really, really loved Coach Webster. He was really the biggest catalyst for me going to Dickinson. There were a lot of other D3 coaches that were interested in me, but Coach Webster made it really easy. He was, you know, he had a vision for Dickinson. It's a Dickinson lacrosse family. It's not all about lacrosse. He cares about you in many other aspects. Like, he helps, you know, with getting jobs and just the family aspect. Like, a lot of other places, you know, there's, like, the seniors, juniors, freshmen, sophomores, they're all divided. But at Dickinson, you know, everybody's in the same boat. Everybody's family. Like, this year, we would hang out as freshmen just as much as we would our fellow seniors. And that's what made Dickinson different, along with it being, obviously, a very, very great school. So, able to get a great academic, you know, degree at the same time while being able to play a top D1 lacrosse or D3 lacrosse, sorry, is you know, something that I couldn't really pass up. Well, you know, coming in at the time, Dickinson wasn't great, but Coach Webster had a vision for this program, and he's seen it through with his great hard work and effort.
So I know you're from Basking Ridge, New Jersey. I'm actually not too far from there. My old high school used to play Ridge in lacrosse, I think towards the end of my career in high school, though I think you and I are separated by enough years that I would have never ran into you. But you know, is there something about, you know, playing or your high school scene in Jersey, kind of playing in that league that maybe, you know, kind of anything particular that readied you for college that you took away from that experience that kind of helped you down the road in Dickinson?
Yeah, I mean, we always played a tough schedule. We'd always play the top teams in around our state, which is a great, you know, we might have always won the games, but it's playing against those type of top players that helped me for the next level, you know, being confident. Played like a Morristown, Ridgewood, Chatham, Summit, Montclair, those type of teams, you know, those players are going wherever, they're going top D1 schools. So being able to play them and see how you stack up kind of helps you with your confidence and, how you can know you can play in the next level. It's pretty cool. My brothers, I have a brother that's a senior in high school, a brother that's a junior. They just won the Group 4 state championship last night, so they're headed to the tournament champions, which is pretty cool. I'm pretty excited for them.
Yeah, congratulations to them. So Brent, you're done with college now, I guess. So what lies next for you?
Well, I've talked to a couple MLL GMs, and I'm going to try to do that first off. Try to, you know, I guess the supplemental draft is the June 10th, so we'll see how that goes. I just turned in all my paperwork, so I guess we'll see how that goes. And then if I get drafted, we'll kind of work from there, because it's kind of difficult right now because, say, depending where I end up, you know, I can't really take a job yet without knowing, like, if I can, you know, get to the games and practices and things like that. But hopefully I want to try to end up in New York City or, you know, Baltimore, something in finance, sports marketing, something like that. I haven't really decided completely, but those are the two places I would really like to be if I could.
All right, well, Brandon, you know, best of luck, I guess, in both your MLL pursuits and your other job pursuits. And thanks a lot for talking to me here. And, you know, congratulations on really wrapping up a great career at Dickinson.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on.
Take care. So that wraps up the Division III podcast for the year. I want to thank everybody who listened in all season. This was really a fun experiment for me, getting to play around with the podcast, talk to a lot of interesting people, and getting myself more ingrained with the great world of Division III lacrosse. As always, any thoughts or comments about this podcast, feel free to email me, zbabo@insidelacrosse.com, or you can find me on Twitter, @ZachBabo. That's @ZACHBABO, no spaces, the Z and the B are capitalized. I'll probably try and get another podcasting project up and running this summer. Until then, continue to listen to Inside Lacrosse's great family of podcasts. You can find them on iTunes under Inside Lacrosse or go to InsideLacrosse.com. Thanks again for listening all season, and take care until next spring.